Psalm 121 through 26. And what the was there anything in there that you saw that you just want to talk about right off the top? Verse 1, Psalm 121, I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help cometh from the Lord which made heaven and earth. Isn't that a great verse? I love that verse. I will lift up mine eyes to the hills from whence cometh my help. To look to God, to just pour out our heart, to open ourselves up to God's answers. And to know where our help comes from. Again, we got to be part of the solution. We got to take an active role. But our help comes from God. We're nothing without Him. We are empty without Him. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Aren't you glad God's never too tired to talk to you? Never too tired to listen. He's always. How many of you wake up in the middle of the night and pray to God sometimes? Everybody? Just wake up and just talk to God. And he never says, well, call me back in the morning. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall never slumber nor sleep. The Lord is thy keeper. The Lord is thy shade upon thy right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve thee from all evil. He shall preserve thy soul. The Lord shall preserve thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth and even forevermore. So what would you think is the point of that song? Encouragement? Okay. Reminder that God is always there. Trust and safety. Faith. Keeping the idea before Israel, before Jerusalem, that our hope is in God. It's easy, especially as we are in this political season, to put our hope in other things, right? Maybe the economy, right? So we think, oh boy, if we could just fix the economy, everything would be all right. Sometimes that's our mindset. Well, if we just had a stronger military, everything would be all right. If we just had the border secured, everything would be all right. We look at these things and they hold value, no doubt. Those things might improve our security. But if we put all of our confidence in those things, we miss the point. Israel, has a great defense force, and they have to be wise about their strategy in dealing with the enemies around them. But if they don't put their confidence in God, if it doesn't come back to knowing that God is in control, then they're helpless. And it's important for us to remember, and I can remember saying this when I was in high school, and the threat we And those who are a little older than I am, your school experience of the threat of nuclear attack was different than mine, right? Those desks, I don't know what was in those desks, but they must have been remarkable, huh? They're going to protect us from nuclear attack. But but all that stuff that the exercises that had to be done because, we might be at war. And I can remember saying to my teacher when that came up, I said, that's not the way it's going to go. Well, what do you mean? I said, the Bible says this is going to happen, and this can't happen if we destroy the world with nuclear bombs, right? So why worry about stuff that we know? The Bible already tells us prophetically what's going to happen, and that's not in it. Now, I do believe that part of the tribulation, part of the devastation to the earth, the water in the trees and the grass that he talks about being burned and polluted, I believe that is part of nuclear fallout. But it's, that's a part of the world, not all of the world. We're not going to blow the earth out of the universe. That's not going to happen, because the Bible says the earth will melt with a fervent heat, right? Remember reading that? And so that's when God purges the earth and brings about a new heaven and a new earth. So this idea, this overwhelming fear that people have that, you know, we're going to destroy everything with nuclear attack is irrational. Even though we may have the capability between all of us, it's not going to happen. And the Bible says it's not going to happen. So we got to keep our confidence in God. You know, having strong military is fantastic, but we got to keep our confidence in God. Having financial security, fine, but we got to keep our confidence in God. Because how many financially secure people have you ever seen that were financially secure one day and bankrupt the next? And it does happen. Just like that, it's gone. We can't put our confidence in money. Money is not the answer. Our answer is God. Psalm 122:1, and going back to that psalm, so the point of the psalm is to make sure the people remember where our hope is. Where is our hope? Our help cometh from the Lord. Now, 122:1, I was glad when they said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord. And I love that verse too. That's something that all of us ought to be excited about, going to God's house and the opportunity to be together in God's house. I love this place. Don't you love this place? It's good to be in God's house. Verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So that sounds like an instruction, doesn't it? They shall prosper that love thee. That's a statement, isn't it? Not a wish, that's a statement. They shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sakes, I will now say, peace be within thee. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. So what is in Jerusalem? Well, the temple. Now is it there? Well, the Temple Mount's there. The site is there. The temple itself is gone. But there's always discussion and preparation for the rebuilding of the temple. And with assurance, it will be rebuilt there on that site. And the idea that all religions will cooperate and celebrate together on that, you know, what is considered a very holy site by the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians. And they will all, except those that have been raptured, right, will have an opportunity there to coexist. The Jews are not allowed on the old temple site without special permission, because it is controlled by the Muslims. And so, you know, you could pay to get in, but a Jewish national still has to get special permission to be there. They have to have, it has to be a tourism guide in order to get in there. They can go around on the outside. They can go to the Western Wall, but to actually go up on the site where the temple once stood, no. Because the Muslims still have control. And just to, because it bears repeating, and the last time I was there, the guide says they don't believe that the temple existed where that Dome of the Rock is now, that golden dome. They don't believe that's the site where the temple was. They believe that the temple was further north, which means that they don't have to tear that down to build the third temple. So they can build a third temple, and so you'd have a Jewish building and a Muslim building, and then the Christians, you know, again, will be raptured, but any that consider themselves Christians after that will be able to coexist in that same site, because the Dome of the Rock does not have to be destroyed. And the Dome of the Rock is not a mosque. The mosque is at the southern end. The Al-Aqsa Mosque, it's got a black dome, if you've ever seen that. So they'll be able to have that coexistence, that one world religion that they're working toward. without having conflict. Isn't that incredible? It's terrible, but it's, you know, but because they have determined that the site of the temple is not where the Dome of the Rock is, that's the key to allow all of them to coexist. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But that is their belief. So as we get nearer to that day when the Christians will be raptured, and you know the Antichrist will come in, I think that his phrase is going to be something to the effect that we're all in this together, right? And they're going to work to get everything, you know, everybody that's come together in kumbaya and have one religion, and everybody get along, and we're not fighting each other, and there'll be peace in Israel. You know, the Jews and the Muslims, everybody will get along for that first half of the tribulation. There will be soul winners, the 144,000 Jews converted by the two witnesses. Who are they? It just says two witnesses, doesn't tell us who they are. And so all of these things will work together until the Jews wake up to the truth of Christ, and they push back against the agreement, the league that's been made, and then, of course, everybody will be against the Jews again. So we're marching that way. But within the gates of Jerusalem is God's house. And so he says, we've got to protect that. We've got to pray for that. That was the big thing. This is where God's house is. And so that's what he says there in verse number 9. 123:1, unto thee lift I up mine eyes, O thou that dwellest in the heavens. Behold, as the eyes of servants look into the hand of their masters, and the eyes of a maiden to the hand of her mistress, so our eyes wait upon the Lord our God until he have mercy upon us. Do you have an image in your mind when you read that, of that look, that servant look, that you know we're looking to somebody and we'll be there if they need us? And probably the closest example, though it's an opposite example, have you ever been with someone who was reliant upon you for their care? And so you constantly had to watch them, because if they went to fall, you'd catch them, right? Any of that, you watched everything they did, because what? If they need you, you respond, okay? So it's opposite of what we're talking about, but it's that same attention, the attention that we would give in that case in serving. Now we look in that, the case of God, we look in that aspect of serving, you know, anything you need. You know, if sometimes, and I through the years, I've had a scratchy throat or something, and I've noticed that, you know, somebody will get up and run and get me a glass of water and bring it up here. That's that aspect of service, you know, that willingness to serve. Not being asked, not being told, not being directed, but just taking care of the need. And that's what he's talking about here. You know, I'm looking to God, just waiting for an opportunity to serve. Any way I can serve, whatever you need. 125:1, they that trust in the Lord shall be as Mount Zion, which cannot be removed, but abideth forever. They that trust in the Lord. Established, rooted, grounded, strong, cannot be moved, cannot be removed. Verse 4, do good, O Lord, to those that be good, and to them that are upright in their hearts. Now, again, this is the song. This is a prayer. Do good to those who be good. 126:1. When the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter, our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Turn again our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. So, the again, as we look at and understand the timing of when this psalm is written, that captivity, we know there was a captivity that followed. But in this, as we look back, we see God's deliverance, God giving us opportunity, God giving us joy in our hearts again. I don't know, I imagine probably everybody in this room has been in a season where your joy was gone, where sorrow overwhelmed you and grief crushed your spirit and occupied all of your thoughts, and it was a central in who you were was the grief and the pain and the sorrow, the loss and the numbness, all of those things. But then that got turned around. That's what we're looking at here. Having lost everything, now recovering. Having lost everything and lost even our hope, now having that hope again. Having not only the hope, but the expectation and the reality of it. Let's read it again. When the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. What does that mean? Them that dream. Had hope again, right? Could actually envision a future. You know, them that dream are a prophet, being able to see success, being able to see what was coming, having an expectation and a hope. When the captivity turned, all of a sudden we got our hope back. What was it that brought your hope back when you were in that? Or maybe you're in that season now. What do you think it will take to get your hope restored? There's somebody I know who was going through an awful time in their marriage and their family, and it was so physically debilitating that she was actually diagnosed with a crushing diagnosis, a disease, to the extent that she couldn't even walk anymore. Can you imagine to lose your ability to walk? But then, what happened? She started a friendship, and that friendship turned into, you know, romance. And you know what? All of a sudden, she was able to do again. Walk. Isn't that incredible? How? Hope. She had a reason. You know, people don't have a reason to get out of bed in the morning. They just lay there and languish. But people that have a reason to get out of bed, you know, they have to get up and they have to get ready and they have to, you know, that changes the way we look at the world. I know sometimes when we have to get out of bed, it makes us grouchy. Right? But if you have no purpose, then what that does, it takes away our hope. But this is real. This is true. Somebody who had gotten to the point where she couldn't even walk. But that desire, that hope, that vision of maybe, you know, having a marriage again, having a life again, that hopelessness destroys. Hopelessness can take everything out of us. But it, again, when that hope is restored, and that's what he says here, we were like them that dream. We had a reason again. We had a vision again. We had an understanding that things could be better. And what happened in verse 2? Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue was singing. Have you ever been through a season in your life where you didn't laugh? And nothing was funny? Even things that were funny weren't funny to you? And people that were happy were irritating? Right? Anybody that had joy must have just wanted to get on your nerves. And so that hopelessness, grumbling of the soul. But then what happened? When the hope returned, the joy returned. The laughter returned, the singing returned. All of a sudden, things were better again. So let me ask you a question. As you're looking at those two descriptions, where are you right now? Guys, if we've just become grumpy, it is a reflection to the world of who we are. When the world sees us and we're just grumpy and grouchy, and yet they know that we're supposed to be Christians, they say, well, that Christianity's not helping so much now, is it? Where are our eyes? What are we looking at? Verse 5, God bless you. Verse 5, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. Does that say anything to you? I just want to stick with that verse. Does that say anything to you? Verse 5, 126:5. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. There's two things in there. One, being that if we don't have a balance of struggle, then we don't really appreciate the celebrations, the joy, right? That makes sense. But I see something new, as I was reading it just now, I saw that in there. Because we have a lot of issues in our culture of people who, PTSD is one of those issues, mental health, stress, anxiety. Do you know what happens is we don't talk about problems. We lock up and block up our troubles and we don't talk about things. I've got friends who, particularly were in war, but they didn't talk to anybody about it. They didn't talk to their buddies about it, and they got home and they didn't talk to anybody about it. It was just, they put it in that box and they left it over there. Except the problem was it wasn't over there, it was up here. And because they didn't talk to anybody about it, eventually the box that they had built around it in their mind fell apart and those thoughts began to reemerge. And it causes a lot of not only what we would consider emotional, but legitimate mental breakdown. In other words, the mind is broken. They that sow in tears. And my friend who, after 25 years, finally, with such debilitation from all of that PTSD, he finally went to a counselor and talked about it. And you know, when he talked about it, all of a sudden, things started getting better. When he was no longer wrapping it up and locking it up and hiding it inside. So those that sow in tears, if we're willing to expose ourselves to the weeping and the transparency of counseling, and we can get those things out. Or, when I say counseling, I don't necessarily mean, a mental health counselor like a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a pastor, anybody like that. Again, if we have a friend we can talk to about this stuff and get it out, that's the key. But when we're willing to talk about it and cry about it and get it out there instead of just saying, I'm okay, everything's okay. No, we got to sow in some tears if we're going to reap in joy. If we want to find the benefits, then we've got to put in the effort. Anyway, I just saw that there. Does that make sense with that verse? Do y'all see that there too? We've got to bare our souls if we want to have joy. And then, of course, verse 6, which we love this verse, and we lock it together with the verse 5. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. So, in the agricultural sense, what does that mean? Okay, so the sheaves are the harvest. Right? The tears are the watering, okay? Have you ever done something you didn't feel like doing? All right? He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again. In other words, it's not always easy. It's not always easy, whether it's about mission work as Christians, as the church, telling people about Jesus and sharing our faith and sharing our hope. It's not always easy. Sounds easy, but it's not always easy. Or whether that's the hard work of ministry, of the struggling with people and crying with people. But we've got to put in the time. We've got to put in the effort. If we want to see the benefit. We've reached a point in our culture where everything is disposable. Marriage is disposable. Parenting is disposable. Right? When we no longer find use of someone, we just cast them aside. No matter what that relationship was supposed to be, first sign of trouble, I'm out. We've reached that point in our culture. That's why so many have decided that marriage is not their best option, because they want to be able to have that trap door that just says, you're out. They don't want to be committed. They don't want to have responsibility. They just want to be able to leave, you know, at any point. That's where we are in our culture. We see it all around us. We've got to put in the time, and we've got to put in the struggle, and we've got to put in the effort. And, you know, the same thing in church. Even in church, sometimes we can disagree. If we leave the church every time we disagree with something, we're going to be able to visit every church in the town. Because everywhere we go, we're going to find something that doesn't exactly match our opinions. And by the way, if we only go to the echo chamber where everybody agrees with us, we're never going to grow. We're never going to develop. We're never going to learn. Just think about when you were in kindergarten and the teacher tried to teach you something. What if you decided, I don't want to do this. I don't believe that 2 + 2 = 4. And I don't believe that the alphabet has to be in that order. And so you just said, I'm just out, right? You would have grown if every time the teacher put something in front of you that you didn't understand or didn't agree with, you said, I'm not staying here anymore. Same thing in church. Sometimes we have to work through our differences. Granted, there are some differences we may never work through, but we have to be able to try to work through them. He that goeth forth with weeping. We always put this in the light of soul winning. Bearing the precious seed. The seed is the word of God. Jesus in the New Testament, he said, the man cast the seed, and some fell in the good ground, and some in the among the thorns, and some in the road itself, in the rocks. Bearing the precious seed. But weeping, in other words, it matters to me. I'm committed to this. I want this to work. I want souls to be saved. Not just the passive, well, I don't care if you get saved or not. Did my part. I gave you the gospel. Go to hell if you want to. Quite an attitude, isn't it? He said, with weeping, I mean, I want you to get saved. I want you to go to heaven. I don't want you to go to hell. See? Bearing the precious seed with weeping, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. Souls will be saved. Comments, questions, criticisms, complaints? What you got? Okay. Yes. Tabernacle, right. Right. The only and the question for those who are listening online is, does the Bible say where the temple should be built, and what does Mount Moriah have to do with it? So God gave David, remember, had built this beautiful place. And he went and he thought it was important that the tabernacle, the tent, was in Jerusalem. And so he had the ark brought to Jerusalem. Of course, there were some problems along the way, but eventually it gets there. And then he walks out and he sees it. He says, you know, I got this beautiful house and God dwells in a tent. That's not right. And so he wanted to build it, and the prophet said, do what is in your heart. And then God said, yeah, no, he can't do it. His son's got to do it. Son can do it, but he's a man of war. He's got blood on his hands. I won't have that. And so then Solomon comes in and builds it. So what does Mount Moriah have to do with it? So the significance of the site, that is the site where Abraham offered Isaac. Okay? So that, and that is why the Golden Dome being built there, of course, in the Islamic tradition, Abraham offered Ishmael, not Isaac. But they say, and if you, the Dome of the Rock, and you can find this online, the pictures of, from the inside, we weren't allowed inside, but you can see that rock where they say, well, that's where Abraham offered Ishmael. And so that's the significance of the site, is that that Abraham offered Isaac there. Now, whether that's that rock, I don't know. But that's the significance of the site with Abraham. Gideon's threshing floor. No, Ornan's threshing floor. Ornan's threshing floor. Where David came to that site to make an offering to God after he had numbered the people and it brought plague on Jerusalem, on Israel. And David said, I need to offer unto God. And Ornan owned that place, and he said, I'll give you the land, I'll give you the wood, I'll give you the animals. And David said, I will not give to God that which cost me nothing. And so, again, the same site, not only of Abraham, but also of this sacrifice that David made. So it is a that's the significance of that place. But the temple that Solomon had built there, the temple that Ezra and Nehemiah in the rebuilding, it would be significant if we were able to say this is the cornerstone. This is the corner, and we go from here and go, and that's the temple. But we don't have that. When Herod, this is important, in Jesus, in the days of Christ, Herod had come in, and he said, it's not big enough. And so they actually expanded the footprint of the temple, Mount. And so we probably would not be able to go back and say it was exactly here. But through whatever means, the Jews have now, and I want to say it's the Hebrew University, which is, you know, that's their thing. They want to rebuild the temple. Have determined that it was not where the Dome of the Rock is, but further north. I don't know the answer as to if we could draw a line and say it was exactly right here. Because it's been destroyed and destroyed and remodeled, you know. So I guess it, in God's providence, allows for those who will rebuild, those who will build the third temple, to have the room to say, well, this is the site, not that site, to fulfill the plan. But that's the significance of Ornan's threshing floor and Abraham offering Isaac. That's the significance of the site. Brother Andy. Mariah. That's the place. And it seems to me, and I didn't obviously think about this ahead of time, but it seems to me like there's more significance to that site. But of course, Jesus being crucified and buried, you know, in that range, outside the walls of the city, but right there near that site. Was that the site for the, I'd have to look at it. It probably was. I would imagine it is, where his prayer in Second Chronicles. I have to look at that. I don't know. I can't commit to that. I know. All right, let's take a break.